Hey, I'm Ralph Burrell. A little background about myself. I'm a research technician at Clemson University, and I work for Dr. Ksenia Gasek. She's the peach breeder. And the peach breeding program at Clemson was kind of in hiatus for about 25 years, but about 6 or 7 years ago, they hired Dr. Gasek, so we're starting kind of from ground zero, and we're about 6 or 7 years in. So I'm going to be talking today about individual sugar and acid compositions within some of the southeastern peach germplasm. So the project overview is to analyze sugar and acid compositions in peach varieties commonly grown in South Carolina, as well as a wide range of cultivars and selections to see their influence on taste and consumer acceptance. And also a big goal of ours is to facilitate our breeding efficiency and developing varieties for the South Carolina peach growers. And mainly what we're looking at here is we're trying to look at breeding from every aspect, so this is just one of those. Maybe if we can find something with individual sugars that would lead to better varieties for the market, then we can exploit that angle. And we really don't know, we have a lot of material at the farm we work at, so we're hoping we'll see some variance and maybe some link between some varieties that taste good, and maybe we can use as parents and cross them. So a little background about our state. It's the number two peach state in the country. Probably wasn't this year because we had a bad freeze and lost about 90% of our crop. But generally, we do $50, $60 million annually in business, and about 14,000 acres and over 50 cultivars that the growers grow. And the season runs from about the 1st of May to a few weeks into September, but the biggest part of the season is June and July for us. So the sampling information, we got fruit from two farms that we sampled. The first farm is the Musser Fruit Research Station, and that's where we work and where our breeding program is located, and we have a large variety block there. So within that, we evaluated 57 released cultivars from a bunch of different breeding programs all over the nation. We got fruit from Michigan, California, New Jersey, Georgia, South Carolina. And then we also analyzed 23 selections from the USDA Byron station from Dr. Oakey's collection. We actually had these as part of an anthocyanin study that he had given us, and they're really diverse. There's red flesh and white flesh and low anthocyanin height. Anyways, we wanted to use it just because there was so much diversity within this set of trees to see if we had some big diversity maybe in the individual sugars and acids. We were also able to do 28 of some of our recent selections, which also has a pretty diverse background. We've used some pollen from Italy and some pollen from some other more exotic sources looking for disease resistance, so thinking maybe we would see some diversity there. And these samples were taken from 2014 to 2016. At Titan Farms, it's a large-scale commercial operation, the biggest one in the state. Maybe one of the biggest ones in the country. They're pretty big, but we collaborated with them, and they gave us a lot of their commonly grown varieties, and so we got 17 in total, and these were sampled from 2013 to 2015. So the methods for our fruit sampling, we did fruit quality on all the fruit, just like our standard lab practice. So we did size, soluble solids, titratable acidity, and I've got the sugar-acid ratio. We put a lot of care into picking the fruit because, especially from what I read, the acid ratios and the sugar ratios change a good bit as you approach ripening. So if you're picking fruit too green, you're probably going to have more citric acid and maybe more glucose and fructose. So we standardized it the best we could, trying to pick commercial ripe fruit that was right, based off the DA chlorophyll readings, but also still commercially firm, and you could still sell it. It was a little bit more difficult with the Titan fruit because we just got that in boxes from their farm, so we were just subject to what they were giving us, which I mean was commercially picked fruit. So we did the best we could there. So from that that set of five fruit that we analyzed in the lab, we took two slices from each one and sliced it up and froze it in liquid nitrogen and stored it until the fall at minus 20. And then when we had some time in the fall, we ground it up and we sent it off for the HPLC analysis to get the individual sugars and acids. And we took some flesh from each bag, so we had basically a conglomerate sample from five fruit for each genotype. And the data was analyzed using SPSS. So for the results, this is just a graph showing the mean sugar content across all cultivars that were analyzed. So just to give you a general idea, and this goes with the other papers that have published on this, the sucrose is about a little over 60% on average, and glucose and fructose are at about a 1-to-1 ratio in the fruit, around 15%, and the sorbitol content on average is about 8-9%. I also put on there the sweetness intensity. If you get it from different sources, it varies a little bit, but generally that's about the numbers everybody comes out with. If you taste fructose, in theory, or according to the research, it's about 1.7 times sweeter than sucrose. So one unit of fructose would be that much sweeter than one unit of sucrose. And on the other end of the spectrum, glucose is not quite as sweet as sucrose at 0.8, and sorbitol is just a little over half as sweet as sucrose at 0.6. So looking at it from a breeding standpoint, you know, we're wanting the peaches to be sweeter. We have a problem with our growers that consumption of peaches has kind of been flat the last few years, to where other fruit crops have been rising, and most of that comes down to the quality in the grocery store. The flavors maybe not as good as we needed to be. So we definitely want the sweetness to go up. So we're looking for material for parents maybe that have higher fructose, and that's the area pointing up. We would like to see higher numbers there, and lower glucose and lower sorbitol, since those aren't as sweet. There have been a few studies, people with other fruit crops increasing the sorbitol content as a healthy alternative fruit, since it's a low calorie and diabetic friendly. But I'm going to ignore that just because I don't see those flying off the shelf. Since we're already struggling with flavor, maybe we don't want to put a bland peach out there when people pretty much consider fruit and peaches healthy anyway. So we would like to probably see lower sorbitol overall. So looking at the data from Titan Farms, we had 7 genotypes that we actually had 3 full years of data. So with freezes and everything, we didn't get everything for every year. But for these 7, we did get 3 years of data. And one interesting thing I want to point out, that we see sugars, total sugars in general, vary a lot from year to year at our farm. And I don't know, maybe like you guys in California have it easier because it doesn't rain and it's sunny there every day, so you probably don't have as much variance. But we can have varieties that are low in sugar maybe early in the season, have a Brix of like 10%, and then a month later a variety that would typically be 15%, we get 3 inches of rain that week and it's 8%. So there's a lot of variance in sugar from year to year, total sugar. But looking at this 3 years of individual sugar data, there actually wasn't that much variance. So while it seems like seasonal and yearly effects affects total sugar quite a bit, the percentage of sugars, it doesn't actually affect that much. It seems the percentages are pretty stable, which was kind of interesting. And then so then the other thing on this graph, looking at the amount of fructose and glucose and really sucrose, wasn't a lot of variance there between the varieties. So from a breeding perspective, looks like we're kind of barking up the wrong tree on this one. We look at other factors than this when we're making our breeding decisions. The only kind of trend you can see here is that, and these are in ripening order, so these go from early season to late season, you can see a little bit of an increase in sorbitol as you get towards the end of the season, and that's consistent throughout the data, and we'll see that more in the next slides. So these are the other varieties that we sampled that we didn't have 3 years of data from Titan. So we either had 1 or 2 years. So I don't have the error bars up there, but shows you the same theme. Not much variance between the individual sugars. They're all pretty much the same, ranging about 15-18% on the fructose and glucose. But again, you can see a trend there then for the sorbitol to be a little bit higher later in the season. And another thing I want to point out is that it seems the fructose and the glucose concentrations are somehow linked. So the ones that are a little bit higher and lower, if you'll notice, they kind of go up and down together. So there's something there at the cellular level. It seems like they're whatever process is converting that, they're converting it at the same rate in general. So this is just a graph showing over all the cultivars we analyzed. I'm pointing out here that the sorbitol is in fact increasing with the season. So I broke everything that we analyzed down into early, mid, and late season varieties. So on the left, you have the early season peaches, and you can see the sorbitol content is rather low in those. But then when you move to mid season and then late season, it's statistically different for every season. So there's definitely something there as we get later into July and August. We're seeing higher levels of sorbitol on the fruit. For whatever reason that is, I'm not really sure. And it seems to be at an expense of the sucrose. It goes down with time. And the fructose and glucose is pretty much the same across all seasons. So now we get to our farm, the mustard farm. And so these are part of the 57 cultivars that we tested out. And we were hoping here, you know, these are a lot more genetically diverse than the standards that the commercial growers are growing. So maybe we'll see a little bit more diversity here. It's something we can work with in terms of breeding. And we did get a little bit more difference here. The first one I circled there, Snow Bright. You'll notice it's almost 80% sucrose. So the fructose and glucose levels are pretty low in it. And taste-wise, that one's like... To me, it comes out as more of like a sugar sweet taste than a fruity sweet taste. So maybe there's a little bit something there. You know, you could look at varieties that are higher in sucrose and have a little bit different flavor profile. And it's the same thing as well with a China Pearl. It's lower in the fructose and glucose, higher in the sucrose. But I do want to point out China Pearl and the other ones I've showed, and then all of these, we still have that same link with glucose and fructose. So up or down a little bit, they're all pretty much hand in hand. But if you notice on the China Pearl, we've broken that link, and we have a lot more glucose than fructose. And that's the only one that we tested out of the cultivars that's done that, so that's just kind of interesting there. And then lastly, I circled a Blazing Star, the one in the middle, which did show a lot higher fructose than all the other varieties we tested. It was up over close to 25%, and... So, you know, maybe we got something to work with there. We know fructose is 1.7 times sweeter than sucrose. So, this Blazing Star actually came from a breeding program in Michigan. And if you read about it on their website, they're real high on the flavor. They think this thing is great. Got an awesome fruity taste. And so maybe, you know, you'd have something here to work with. But on the next slide, you'll see when we look at total sugar content from the HPLC data, Blazing Star is a dead last on the list. So it doesn't have much sugar at all. So it kind of, at least from a breeding perspective, puts it on the bottom of the list. That's also interesting to me because I know, like, and this is a recent release from that Michigan breeding program. I'm sure they're not picking the lowest sugar varieties to release out to the public. So I think it's probably something with the environment here between Michigan and South Carolina that's making a... Because we have 8 or 10 releases from them, and they're pretty much consistently lower on the sugar. What I would be interested to see is if up there, if the sugar is in fact higher, maybe also the fructose is higher, and that's one of the reasons they released it. So they may have something there with the fructose. This is the rest of the varieties from Mustard Farm. We only have 1 year of data on these, but again, it's just pointing out that we have that relationship with the fructose and glucose. That NJF 16 Pintu has actually been named now. It's Tango's. It's really high in sucrose. It's another sugar sweet instead of fruity sweet variety. But no breaks in the link here with that fructose glucose ratio. So now moving on to our South Carolina selections that we tested. We actually had a good bit more diversity here, probably because of the backgrounds. We also have stuff in here that we would probably never release. So maybe that's, you know, the reason it's carrying something else with it. But one interesting that I circled here, this 9-6, if you notice, it has zero fructose. And actually, the lab we sent it off to, when they gave us the data back, they thought maybe they had done something wrong because they were like, well, you know, I don't know why the number was zero for fructose on this one. But actually, one of the parents for this one was the China Pearl from a couple slides up that had broken that link with the glucose and fructose. So I think there's probably something there with these genetically. We got something going on, but they're not making any fructose. But overall, this one actually tastes really good, and it's extremely high in sucrose. So again, this would be another one maybe we could exploit for the sugar sweet flavor. Going to the Byron material, we do have a couple in here as well that broke that link. This 9169 that I've circled. You can see it has almost no fructose, but it's really high in glucose. Fortunately, that one's really high in sorbitol and really high in glucose. And this one we actually tried this summer, and it had about 16% Brix, which you think would taste pretty good, and it was almost flavorless. Like it tasted watery, like you'd think it was something more like 7 or 8% Brix, and blaming that on the high percentages of the low sweetness sugar. So kind of interesting there. And then another one we tested is up over almost 40% in sorbitol. That one's also just kind of interesting, but not something that would be useful for breeding. And then the same with the 4887. Moving on to the acid content, it turned out the fruit had about 50% on average malic acid across the material, and then about equal parts of citric and quinic acid, a little over 25% on those. And then a shikimic and fumaric, it was almost non-detectable, just a fraction of a percent on those. And I looked at our taste data, what taste data we do have, and I couldn't really find any correlation there with those acids and any kind of flavor notes we've made. So I don't know if those play a big factor or not. Some interesting things about the acid data. We did see a trend with the ripening season. If you look here, we got early, mid, and late again. The malic acid seems to go up as you get later in the season, and the citric acid goes down with time in the season. So that on average came out in the statistics of the data. Next, another interesting thing, I broke it down by acid level. So if you have like a low acid variety that's really sweet and a high acid variety, it turns out that they have equal amounts of quinic acid, but actually where they lose the acid is in the citric and the malic acid. So in summary, there's a little difference amongst commercial cultivars. The stuff we analyzed with the diverse backgrounds had more variance. Sorbitol levels generally increased as the season progressed, and the fructose-glucose ratio appeared to be constant across most genotypes. Malic acid generally increased later in the season, and citric acid decreased, and acid profiles from low-acid genotypes contained a higher percent of quinic acid. Future goals would be to focus breeding efforts maybe towards more of a sugar sweet peach with higher sucrose, make targeted crosses amongst late season selections to decrease the sorbitol content, and then maybe evaluate more diverse material in hopes of discovering a genetic source for a lower glucose but higher fructose fruit. And then lastly would be to create tasting panels to try to figure out what more of this data means in terms of the flavor profiles and, you know, how people like them. And then those are my acknowledgments, and thanks.